The next session will be an open discussion about the Forever Declaration. We have three wise men to lead this discussion who have been the architects behind the Forever Declaration. Judge Rudiger Wolfram is the director of Max Planck Institute of International Law and as the former president of the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea. We also have on this discussion Ambassador Jorge Borgoño from Chile, who is the ambassador to the United Nations from Chile, and longtime expert of Antarctic affairs. And we have also Mike Richardson. I'm not your mother. So please, Jorge, Rudiger, and Mike, come up to lead this discussion. Rudiger and Jorge also will be involved in the discussions tomorrow. But in advance of that, I would like to present them each with a medal. Rudiger?
Thank you very much. Very kind. Thank you.
And Jorge. So the declaration is in your book, and the intention of this discussion was stimulated by Mike Richardson in the various email communications that it was important that the summit itself take ownership for the declaration. So rather than having a finalized declaration that will be introduced tomorrow, it was important to have this available for you to discuss and for the comments to be incorporated into the final declaration that will be available for signature tomorrow morning. So, with no further ado, I leave you to the three wise men.
You know, tomorrow will be a great day. It will be the day for the signature of the Forever Declaration, the declaration issued by the summit commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Antarctic Treaty System. So delegates, participants have received an initial draft of that declaration, and this session is to exchange ideas, if someone has an objection, a strong question, this is the time to have it. We will have this discussion led by, I think, some comments that Dr. Mike Richardson has or could have already on the declaration. And I would ask Judge Wolfram to make any closing remarks when we end this discussion. I myself have the feeling that we have the product, but that some polishing is required. Thank you.
It falls upon me, we have divided our task a bit, that I will first of all try to explain to you how this declaration was meant to work, how it's being built up, so to speak, and what it is meant to achieve. I would recommend that we switch on the lights for the room. It's nearly impossible to see anybody, and we later will have to rely upon to see you. Let me first explain what should be the objective of a declaration. You could do it very easily and have a simple task, namely just to draft a declaration celebrating the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Antarctic Treaty. That's pretty simple. However, we were quite somewhat more ambitious. And we try now to cover three different objectives. That's always complicated, and therefore we may have tilted it the one way or the other. Certainly, a celebration, this a celebration aspect. But second, we wanted to emphasize the lessons to be learned from the development of the Antarctic legal regime. The last panel discussion we have had was quite important in this respect. Tucker Scully has pointed that out. What governance instruments have developed on the basis of the Antarctic Treaty, followed by the protocol and the agreed measures, etc. Thirdly, we try also to emphasize what are the challenges for the Antarctic legal regime. You can put it under the headline, looking forward. These three aspects should be covered. If you have found the declaration, or the draft declaration rather, in your folder, it's on page 11, as far as I recall, right? Then please open it and I'll guide you through the text, indicating what each paragraph is meant to do. Apart from the first one, first of all, I should say we have a preamble, so to speak. The declaration is drafted in the way of UN resolutions or UN declarations, and the preamble, and then an operative paragraph, part rather. Let me first lead you through the preamble. The first three paragraphs, welcoming, recognizing, and again recognizing, is more or less looking backward. It's what I characterized as celebrative aspect. The next point, recognizing again that increased commitment to the objectives of the treaty has been demonstrated by its enhanced membership, is dealing with the question of legitimacy. By the way, you hear, you see a figure, 65% of the population, whereas in this morning somebody mentioned 80% of the population. But I believe 65% is on the safe side. Therefore, let's keep that one. The next one, a paragraph aware, starting with aware, that's a template, and visionary nature of the other has been employed to good effect, is looking, so to speak, into the second aspect, namely lessons to be learned. There, the Antarctic Treaty system has had its impact on other international agreements. Then the next one is again recognizing that the effectiveness has been enhanced by the Antarctic Treaty system. Here the term of art is being included, and the other treaties are referred to. This is perhaps a statement of facts. And then we come to the bearing in mind, namely the relationship between the Antarctic Treaty and the UN, United Nations Charter, or to put it in different terminology, the contribution of the Antarctic Treaty system to peace. This morning we touched upon that when it was elaborated upon that the Antarctic Treaty was developed during the Cold War and was part of, at least, the child of the Cold War. I have my doubts about that, but it's common view. Then, again, noting is the environmental mechanisms. That is covering the second and the third aspect, namely, first of all, that particular environmental mechanisms have been developed under the Antarctic Treaty legal system and used in different places. And finally, in the preamble, the emphasis on continued scientific research, the dissemination of its results, etc. You heard in the last panel this afternoon, therefore I can only but congratulate the chairman or the coordinator. He has put the stage properly, for we have the explanation for that paragraph just still in our ears. Then I come to what I refer to the operative part. First of all, it reiterates the view that Antarctica should forever remain a continent devoted to international cooperation. We heard about that. The pursuit of a scientific endeavor, and that it should be used exclusively for peaceful purposes. That is the state of art. And then we refer again to the pristine nature of Antarctica and the inspiration to present and future generations. The emphasis is also on future generations. That comes up later again. That affirms that the Antarctic Treaty, strengthened by the constituents of the Antarctic Treaty system, remains the effective legal means of providing for the international governance of the continent and its surrounding waters. This is very broad phraseology, I accept that, but please don't forget that the protocol speaks about dependent and associated ecosystem. This is a reference to this provision. Calls on all states, this speaks for itself. The next one is broadening the cooperation, that's evident. That also refers to community interests. Then SCAR, we just heard about the development of SCAR, therefore I don't need to have further to further elaborate upon that, and encourage all states to draw on the lessons learned from the Antarctic experience, also the spillover to other international agreements, and calls on all states in cooperation with relevant non-governmental organizations. They play a significant role, I would like to emphasize this, in the Antarctic Treaty system. This is a text. It is not the first version of the draft declaration. I won't detail how many drafts have been circulated amongst the three of us and some others. We are not the only ones. Everything can be improved, and as our coordinator and Ambassador Bugunio has said, now it's up to you to come up with suggestions, modifications, changes, or whatsoever. We'll take good note of them, and at the end, I may try a summing up. At least tomorrow morning, you get a finalized version. Thank you very much. Horgan, now that I hope you can see who is raising his hands.
Well, I had, in fact, seen the text that you've now got before you, and I did comment to Professor Wolfram the other day on a couple of aspects, and I won't raise all of them because some of them are minor, but I regard minor editorial drafting comments. And I'll just go through some of the more key ones and take you down the text. We have three paragraphs in the preamble that start with recognizing, but in the third one, I thought it might be useful to insert not only a reference to the objectives of the treaty, but also to the principles. In other words, to say to the objectives and principles of the treaty. That's my first point. Now, we then have a paragraph which starts aware that, the template, followed by a paragraph which talks about recognizing the effectiveness of the Antarctic Treaty and so on. Now, the second of those paragraphs, in effect, deals with further international cooperation within the Antarctic Treaty. And therefore, my view is that the previous paragraph, in other words, the one that starts aware that the template, should actually not refer to Antarctica at all, but actually should give the sense that the Antarctic Treaty has provided the template and so on for other treaties, in other words, non-Antarctic treaties. And therefore, I would have suggested that in line 2 of that paragraph, I hope you're still with me, it says, has employed to good effect, I would insert then, in other treaties seeking to promote international cooperation. Stop. And I would strike the rest of that paragraph so that one ends up with a paragraph that deals with the wider global issue and one has a paragraph that deals with the internal issues of the treaty system.
This paragraph then should go after this one.
Yeah, I'm not... Well, we can come to that. I then had a slight problem insofar as the next paragraph has this word forever in it, and of course we're talking about a forever declaration. And the only reference to forever in the Antarctic Treaty is effectively a sort of generic desire found in the preamble of the treaty. I think it's in the preamble of paragraph 2. It's not found in the substance of the treaty. So that paragraph is quite correct, that Antarctica should remain forever a natural reserve devoted to peace and science. However, we then, in the next paragraph, find forever being reiterated again. And I'm not a lawyer, but I would have thought it was actually incorrect, because the treaty doesn't actually say that. The treaty doesn't say that the treaty parties have pledged forever that, and then A, B, and C. What the treaty does is it's indefinite in nature, and it might well be that the indefinite nature of the treaty means that it goes on forever. But then again, the treaty could collapse next week or next month or next year. So it does seem to me that inserting a forever there, whilst it might be laudable to try and amplify the title of the declaration, is incorrect. But I would stand to be corrected on that one. A further point I would have is that the penultimate preambular paragraph is the one that says, convinced that in 2009 the Antarctic Treaty, as the key pillar of the Antarctic Treaty system, etc. And I would simply say, do we need that paragraph, given that the second operative paragraph, no, the third operative paragraph, which says, affirms that the Antarctic Treaty strengthened by, etc., etc., it does seem to me that in admittedly a different formulation, they're more or less saying the same sort of thing. And one would be better off simply having the paragraph in the operative part of the declaration rather than having that one in the preamble. And my last point I would simply raise, and it's one perhaps I could direct at someone like David Walton, is that the third paragraph from the bottom talks about to continue foster cooperation amongst scientific communities. And I wonder if it would simply be better to say amongst the international scientific community. Those are the only comments I had, Chairman. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Judge Golitsyn, I took note.
Yes. Judge Golitsyn.
Yes, I have actually 4 comments. Being a lawyer and not a political scientist, I would probably disagree on some points with Ambassador Richardson. I noticed that there are 2 words that are excessively used in this text. This is forever and preservation. And I think it's all coming from protocol to the Antarctic Treaty. So my first comment is on the second, it's a penultimate paragraph on, preamble paragraph on the first page, starting with noting. I don't believe that the words should remain forever a natural preserve. If you apply bifocal approach, could be differently understood. I do not believe that Antarctica should be forever preserved as a natural preserve. So I think that it should be either deleted or redrafted, because Antarctica will not be preserved forever. At some point, you'll have commercial minerals activity. So if you use the term preserve, it may have the implication that you cannot undertake these activities. My second comment is on the next page. It's the first paragraph starting, also preamble paragraph starting, noting that. I disagree that the Antarctic environmental mechanisms actually developed, and its dependencies have become a model for international environmental law at large. I doubt it. These mechanisms probably are pretty good for the Antarctica, but I doubt that they have developed as a model for international environmental law at large. That's not correct. It would not be applied in some other areas. It may be specific for the Antarctic, but not for other areas. My next comment is on operative paragraph. It's the fourth from the bottom, starting with calls on all states. Here again, you have at the very end, remain forever the cornerstone that ensures the preservation of Antarctica. I would suggest that it should be changed to read, should remain forever the cornerstone for any future activities in Antarctica, rather than preservation of Antarctica. And finally, my last comment is on the last operative paragraph, which starts with calls on all states. I think that at the very end of this paragraph, in the last line, it should be inserted either on the basis of Antarctic treaty principles or through the Antarctic treaty system to say, to ensure that Antarctica be preserved on the basis of the Antarctic treaty principles in perpetuity for mankind. So it will be clear that it will be preserved only on the basis of the application of the principles of the treaty and not under any other arrangement. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to step back a moment and just ask, what is the purpose of this declaration and to whom is it addressed? Is it us speaking to ourselves and feeling rather self-satisfied, or do we actually have a purpose for it? Are we going to send it to somebody? Are we hoping that it will achieve something? I think we should just reflect on that question before we get too much into the detail of exactly what it says. Thank you.
I was just going to agree with that statement. One of the things is if this could be either a statement that is very specifically addressed to states or international communities, or it can be addressed to a broader public, especially if you're asking all of us to sign it during the rest of the during the rest of this meeting. And in that vein, one of the if you are going to make it a broad statement that involves everyone, I would actually sort of take out a lot of the language that actually addresses states specifically. I think that there's no, I mean, I think that in the statement right underneath the Antarctic Treaty Summit, when we get into the values, it says, reiterates the view that Antarctica should be forever remain a continent devoted to international cooperation, the pursuit of scientific endeavor, and so on. I think, why don't we make the international implicit and just say that it is a continent devoted to cooperation. And subsequently, if you take out international or states from all of the subsequent statements, it makes it a bit more of a broader statement saying what the principles of Antarctica are for all people, all non-government organizations, everyone who is a signatory to this, anyone who would believe in this, who would sign on to this. If it's just for states, then that's fine, and that's with the language. But again, I would like to have a statement at the beginning saying, addressing the states of the world or addressing this particular audience. Thank you.
Could I respond to that?
The idea was that this draft declaration, then a declaration tomorrow, would be signed by those who are willing to do so here, starting by His Highness the Prince of Monaco. That's what the program says. And secondly, then this declaration was meant to be put on the internet so that it can be signed by everybody who likes to do so. It is addressing the scientists, the community of scientists, but also the states. We are not representing states here, at least I believe so, and therefore we are individuals. some way or the other connected with Antarctica or interested, or some of us having been doing research for, as you heard, 40 years in Antarctica. Therefore, we have a certain commitment, an emotional commitment, a professional commitment, or a commitment, such as for me, as a lawyer. Therefore, we can certainly make it quite clear that we are part and parcel of the civil society, but the ones who, if I may say so, who are the ones who do or govern the activities in Antarctica are states. That's a reality, and therefore we have to address that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not quite clear either about who's being addressed here with this manifesto. If we consider ourselves as part of civil society, then I think in order to situate this forever declaration, one should also recognize that there have been two other games in town. The Antarctic World Park idea, and then the Heritage of Mankind idea. And it seems that the Antarctic Treaty game is the one that has survived, has shown itself to be resilient. It is gradualistic, so to speak, flexible. It might be useful to recognize that this particular line of action and institutionalization of an idea about the management of the Antarctic is the one that is most realistic. I mean, there's the World Park idea, and then we have the Heritage of Mankind idea. And this, in turn, would mean that, for example, on the second page, about believing the pristine nature of Antarctica will provide, etc., one could incorporate some of the language which also appears in the ideas about the International World Park. I mean, the aesthetic quality. And also now we've had the Antarctic is not only for scientists, there's poets, there's writers, there's artists that go there and come back with outreach activities as we've had in the fourth International Polar Year. So it not only embraces any longer just scientists, but there are also other people, professionals, and so on. Finally, there's also, I object to this statement of forever, which is a bit confusing because there's a little bit of a bomb in here with reference to the environmental protocol. Within it, there's a reference to 2041. Now, that's not recognized here. There's a contradiction between that formulation, as far as I understand, the Madrid Protocol. I mean, there's
the 50 years
limitation
protocol.
Of 50 years, and the time clock is going to run until 2041. Now, and we're saying forever, okay? At least that's my understanding of it. Maybe I'm wrong. Isn't there a 50-year moratorium?
It's an indefinite moratorium.
It's an indefinite moratorium. That's one of the old mysteries.
It's
an indefinite prohibition, not a moratorium.
It's an indefinite prohibition.
That's unclear.
It's simply it's the mechanism on the voting that might change at that time, or does change at that time.
Yeah. Okay. The moratorium is indefinite.
Oh, Gillian.
Okay. Who is it?
Gillian Trick.
Appropriate to have a declaration from this summit. I think that's a good idea. But I think it's potentially a very dangerous document with this notion of forever. And I have to say that I think the difficulty with placing that concept on the declaration is that it runs the risk of destroying the value of the Article 4. Article 4. In other words, Article 4 all is designed to ensure that the parties can view the matter according to their own juridical position. And if we propose that a declaration recognize a certain position forever, we are eliminating the flexibility that Article 4 was designed to provide. So I think it's a very dangerous thing to do. And I don't see any need for it at all. I think it's far better to restate the central purposes and objectives and be clearer in more concise language as to what the purpose of the declaration is, which is to reiterate that this has been a form of governance that has been relatively effective, and that the purpose, or that this summit favours and endorses that governance structure with a need for future advance and so on. But nonetheless, I think anything which suggests that it has a has an it should have a lifelong existence in perpetuity would undo all of the last 50 years of hard work. So I think it's very dangerous. But I think it can be solved in quite a simple way. Firstly, you don't use that language. But secondly, and this is purely by way of example because I haven't had time to go through the document, but if I can go back to an example, for example, the fifth from the bottom under the substantive part of the declaration calls on the parties to align themselves, etc. Instead of using a phrase like recognise that such principles should remain forever the cornerstones, you simply say that you recognise that such principles are the cornerstones that ensure the preservation of Antarctica. In other words, it's placed in the present as a statement of what you believe to be the case. Why raise a doubt about it? So I think it's really a problem of language that can easily be sorted out overnight, if somebody's prepared to put a couple of hours into it. But I think I agree also with a couple of speakers that we've got to be very clear in the preamble what is the point of this declaration and how did it arise and to whom is it addressed. And I do think that there is some value in acknowledging the wider international civil society, because after all, aren't we as civil society making this declaration? It makes some sense to have it as a more inclusive concept, and I can't imagine that it would do any harm if we did. Thank you.
Yes, not quite, no.
Was that for me? I can't quite see whether I was pointed to or not. The last comments made were very close to what I was going to say. It's going to be very challenging for you to find an agreement in this body when most of us have not seen this text before we came here, and whether many will have different views on different aspects of it. It reminds me a little bit of negotiations within the Antarctic Treaty consultative meetings, with no comparison beyond that. If the purpose of this is two things, to say that we have done a great deal of good work over the past 50 years, and that we believe this is the kind of road we should go down in the future, then this whole business could be done very, very much shorter and much simpler. I think we should laud ourselves on the fact that this has managed to work as a system, that the number of countries have increased greatly, and I think we should be precise on the number percentage of human population that are part of the treaty, because I think that's an important piece of information. And I think we should point to the future and say something about the way we hope it would be going, building on the principles of the treaty. If we go that way, it would be possible to make this very short and hopefully something which would be read by the outside world. And I also suggest it should be signed, and there shouldn't be so much reference to this meeting from two different dates, but to this meeting agreeing this on the 50th anniversary on the 1st of December, rather than sort of a period for the meeting. And say, on that day, 50 years after, we agreed that this was the way into the future. That would be my approach to this, but it's impossible to negotiate a text in a big room. So I would suggest those who feel willing to do this, that they go ahead and try to do that overnight.
No. Okay.
No. Marie Jacobsen is waiting now long enough.
For some long time. We can have it back. But, I mean, We have to have
thank you very much.
Treatment for both sides. Everything has gone to us.
I have a few comments to make. I agree with Aunt Elsinga and Gillian Triggs that we need a clearer reference to the civil society. Several has emphasized the fact that individuals have taken part in the development and been engaged in the development. And I think we should, given the fact that this is not a governmental declaration, I think this should be put at the fore. I wouldn't mind shortening it either, but that's nothing that I would press for. But I would like to take up the reference to forever. And I understand, and I start from Judge Galitzin's view. I understand what he says, and of course he, as a very knowledgeable Antarctic law person, sort of reads in exactly the political sensitiveness to the word natural reserve. And it is very true that to many of us who have been negotiating, a natural reserve means something. That means non-mineral resource activities. Now, of course, we have already Antarctica labeled as a special conservation area under UNCAF. So the idea of and that was before the CRAMRA was negotiated. So the idea that Antarctica is some sort of a special conservation area or specially protected regime is not alien to the legal provisions of the treaty or the combination of mineral resource activity should they ever take place. I'm not going to pronounce myself of the wishfulness of that, but there is, I think, a very quick fix, and I agree with Olav Åheim that now we're in a situation that we negotiate here, like in the consultative meeting. There is a very quick fix in the sentence that starts with noting the indefinite nature of the Antarctic Treaty and that Antarctica should remain, and then you just say, a natural reserve forever devoted to peace and science, because I don't think anybody would argue against the fact that we would like to have Antarctica forever devoted to peace and science. So that's an idea. Thank you. That means that you don't have to change the title of the declaration.
We are grateful for small mercies.
On the other side.
Yeah, it's on your right side.
Thank you. As being delegated here by the United Nations Environment Programme, and as it was made reference here that you would like to address the civil society, and furthermore, as it was told here today that the element of environmental protection came later into the treaty or has been followed up later in the related agreements, I would like to see more emphasis on the fact that the civil society is imagined the Antarctic continent as the largest, least touched wilderness area and a laboratory where also science can be based on fairly undisturbed ecosystems. So if there's a possibility to get this imagination of quite a number of people on Earth, also in the context of the World Park and the humankind heritage, as was said before, I would be very happy to see that. And another point I would like, as it is also perception that the Antarctica is a continent, a terrestrial area where the World Park idea is there, and as the Antarctic Treaty is also the surrounding seas, and as we heard also about the complications with the connection to the UNCLOS, I would also say something about connecting these terrestrial and marine systems in the same spirit of pristineness.
Oh.
We are at the time. One more, sure. Okay.
Thank you. I refer to this, the last paragraph. The term of international spaces.
International spaces.
I strongly recommend that we change this term, because in international law, there is no such kind of terminology such as international spaces. As we all know, that in the Convention on the Law of the Sea, there is no any word of international waters, and this has created problems in international practice. In my view, the correct terminology is that spaces beyond national jurisdiction. And the second point I want to make is that regarding paragraph 4, recognizing the increased commitment to in the first page, recognizing the increased commitment to the objectives of the treaty. And here we mention that there are 47 states parties, and we should further state that we encourage more countries to join the treaty system. And the last point I want to make is that in this declaration, we should mention something about the new issues that we face in the Antarctica, and also in some areas such as Arctic. For example, the climate change. We say nothing about such kind of new issues. So I think we should say some words in this declaration. Thank you.
Thank you. As far as your second point is concerned, may I draw your attention, Mr. to page 2, encourage all states with an interest in the future of Antarctica to accede to the Antarctic Treaty. There we have that. It's exactly what you wanted. In the middle of page 2. Yes. Issues, yeah.
We should close this thing. I want to respond.
Okay. Shall I briefly summarize?
I want to respond to...
Sure. Sure.
Well, our time is a bit up. As I said, Dr. Wolfram will... close this act, but I would like to respond to some essential points. One point, why a declaration? Why a declaration? This is not a mere exercise in self-congratulation that the treaty has gone over, that it has enriched, that it's important. It's more than a record that then we proudly exhibit it. So it is a call for action. The other element, the question forever. Well, forever is implicit in the concept that it should remain forever peaceful,
and dedicated to only peaceful activities. You must recall that that is in the protocol, that the protocol says that Antarctica is a natural reserve devoted to peace and science. If it is devoted, it means that it should forever be devoted. And I understand the anxieties of both sides, the claimant as Gillian, and and basis of claim as Vladimir, finding a language which may be cryptic sometimes, but it is not. It's not intended to do one or the other. It's intended to say that this, the most magnificent instrument that we have had until now, is not only an accommodation between the parties, but it has and will have a spillover.
I would like to thank Ambassador Borgogno, Judge Wolfram, and Dr. Richardson for leading this discussion, which we knew in advance was not going to be trivial or easy. It's certainly the effort this evening to put together your comments in a way that will be acceptable and interesting and visionary, with hope and inspiration for all of human society. I'd like to thank the gentlemen for their effort. Thank you very much.